You're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie, and we're going to go straight to Dr. Noor Barry. As I said, she's an immunologist, and this is purely as a way of settling fears around COVID and placing it in its context as a public health issue, which is really important to remember.
So first of all, how did we lose COVID? COVID is an airborne disease and it travels like smoke, exactly like smoke. And we didn't recognize that. We didn't recognize that, of course, a novel virus that's just skipped out of wherever it came from is going to evolve to get to know us better and become more transmissible. This is a natural selection advantage. We should have anticipated that. We didn't understand that sometimes it transmits loads and sometimes it never transmits at all. So just because you didn't see the effect of your intervention doesn't mean it's not going to work when you need it. And that's why we didn't recognize the value of early lockdowns. And that just became a political football when it should never have been. It's a simple strategy. We should have never had done that with that particular one. We didn't react with urgency, not enough urgency, to the threats. I think there's some level of getting too comfortable with this virus. It's, you know, it's a rapidly transmissible disease that really can cause long-term effects. I think that if you don't recognize that threat and you don't prepare for it adequately, you don't recognize what it's going to do to your economy, your people, their health, their social life, everything is interrupted by COVID, and it has interrupted the world. So we didn't prepare for this threat adequately. So we didn't, we weren't fast enough with our vaccine program. We didn't diversify it enough. We haven't built the quarantine that we need, and we haven't even started thinking about the vehicles that we should be transporting these people to and from quarantine in, because our drivers are being exposed and they don't need to be. I'm sure we can build a vehicle that does not involve driver and occupants in the same car, you know? So that's how we lost it. What is zero COVID? It's really important that we don't radicalize zero COVID. Zero COVID is actually just normal public health. We're not expecting zero COVID all the time in the community, but what we really want to see is a really, really focused effort. And I think that using the number zero as a target focuses the mind, focuses the resources, and brings the community together around something that is fairly easy to understand. And that is that when COVID turns up in the community, it's a threat to us all, and that we have to do something about it. And that basically we want to do something about it until it's not a threat to us anymore, that there's a low risk of resurgence. And when we make decisions about this, we need to make it taking into account how to do it humanely, kindly, but effectively, so that we can all have what we need, which is our health and our freedom to go about our business and be with each other and connect with each other again. So Zero COVID Australia basically wants to use science as the core to tackle this health problem and community strength, essentially. So airborne mitigations, surveillance for strains, and ring fencing and border controls. These are not new things. They were part of the pandemic plan, and we'll come to that. So can we get to zero COVID? So at the moment, we've got a new strain. We're feeling uncertain because it's new and it seems to be highly transmissible and worse, basically. And when you talk about zero COVID in this environment, people are so angry and so upset and so sad that sometimes it's really, really difficult to even say the word zero without immediately having them shut down on you, because you can't imagine it right now. Things are just getting worse and worse. And if you think that things, the hospitals will be overwhelmed, I can tell you that the hospitals were on the border of overwhelm before we ever even had COVID. And our leadership is quite clearly looking in the direction of not having zero COVID. And my experience with any of these kind of issues around the world is that it appears that, you know, the situation goes exactly where you point it. And if you point it as we're going to live with the virus, and that's exactly what we're going to do, and it's going to be really, really challenging. So how did we get to zero COVID in the first place? You know, that's important to look at, because, you know, we want to get there again. How do we do it? We used stay-at-home orders, we used test, trace and isolate. Those were the two key ones, I think, that really, really made the difference. There were also other issues like social distancing, hand washing, etc., which may have played a part, but it's kind of hard to quantify. And we didn't really plan for it. It just sort of happened because we did what it said in the textbook. We did our public health thing, and that's what got us to where we wanted to go, despite the fact that a lot of people said that it was never going to work. Have we ever tried to eliminate something before? Well, apparently we're still trying to eliminate stuff all over the place. Here is a tuberculosis plan, which is current as of last year, and it says we're going towards elimination. Now, TB is actually a really difficult disease to catch the tail of because people can have it for donkey's years and they can carry it around. They can have no symptoms. And then suddenly one day they're coughing up TB. You know, that's a really tricky one. That can sleep in your system for 20, 30 years. And we still try to do something about that. So I think that to say that we're not going to be able to eliminate disease ever and not aiming for it is unfair in the COVID situation because we have aimed for it for other serious diseases before. And COVID is a serious disease. It's going to be a multi-system disease. Okay, so public health is a group effort. It's about other people. It's not just about myself and what I can do to protect me. It's about everybody. And if you start cutting the lines between who's compliant, who's not compliant, who's vaccinated, who's not vaccinated, and othering people, like saying, well, you know, it doesn't matter because they had comorbidities, or, you know, well, you know, so-and-so can't stick to the rules, they don't really understand them or whatever. If you other people and you don't make a strategy that is going to be inclusive of everyone, it is going to fail because we live in a world with other people. And that is what public health is about. We don't drive our car safely and stick to the speed limits and everything purely for ourselves. It's also for other people, and that's what it's all about. It's about yourself and others, and this takes a group effort. There's no point setting policy that says you do this and you get vaccinated and you wear a mask if you feel like it, or don't wear a mask if you don't feel like it. That's not going to work. We've got to do this together. Here are some interesting historical documents. One of them is still in process. So this is the pandemic influenza plan for the country and the New South Wales state. And it quite clearly says that, you know, what to do with airborne diseases and precautions. So it's not like we didn't know what to do. We didn't need to draw up last minute plans and make everything different just for COVID. We knew exactly what to do, and we've always known exactly what to do. These plans were made in partnership with WHO, and they have been around for decades. This is our current infection control resource. It's really, really good. And I thoroughly recommend anyone that wants to find out about how to control COVID to have a look at this website. It is designed for healthcare, but I am a firm believer that healthcare is, you know, apart from some building engineering issues, healthcare in terms of the practical day-to-day and how people interact and how people use things and, you know, education, learning, I think it's not that different from the rest of the world. You know, we're still people. We still get taught stuff. We still get checked that we have done it right. You know, these are the same processes that you can do in any workplace. And I'm hoping that soon, over the next few weeks or months, or even sooner if possible, we can make guidance like this that's suitable for businesses everywhere. There are a few things that we should be doing. So we should be looking at the route of transmission and how we can reduce that. So the airborne disease spread needs to be addressed now. We can't ignore it anymore. We've been putting off that homework for too long. We need to do what we were already doing in terms of reducing movement, staying at home. We can use rapid tests to start looking at cases in the community now, because rapid tests do have issues in terms of picking up false positives. So you can't use them when you've only got one or two cases necessarily. But when you've got populations at risk or bigger outbreaks like we have now, rapid tests are absolutely the way forward. And we should all have some in our cupboard by now. Mass pool testing is another technique that can be used together with sewage surveillance. So if you know that sewage has come up positive somewhere, you can actually get samples from everybody. But instead of running a separate PCR for each person and using up all those resources, you can actually test them in batches so that you know roughly where it is, and then go back and look again in those areas if you need to. And in the meantime, obviously having the safety of a lockdown in that area if you need to. So that's another issue. Although when you've got a widespread outbreak like this, really, and personally for me, I think for Delta, a more uniform, standard, easy to understand instructions works better for most of the population. So if you start hard, keep it simple, that does help a lot more. But this can actually pinpoint where your problem is. And then we need to decrease the spread of the outbreak growth. So can we do that? That's the question. You know, people want to know, can we do that? So I think everyone, when they get into a really scary situation, they're looking for lifeboats. They're looking for lifeboats. And some of our leaders have jumped onto the lifeboat of, well, you know, it was going to go this way anyway. And that's their way out, their door out of the house on fire. And I sometimes wonder if whether some people might think, well, you know, are you hanging on to zero COVID for, as your sort of comfort blanket, your lifeboat? And something that doctors do is that we think about the acceptability of a treatment plan. So a pandemic plan is like a treatment plan for lots of people, and whether or not it's worthwhile, whether the patient would like that, whether it's futile, you know, these kind of questions go through our mind. And my point is that I don't think a population like Australia, which is so enthusiastic to participate in public health, I think that they would find the following interventions practical, acceptable, and I think that they'd be really, really pleased to have something to do that will work to reduce the spread of this horrible disease. So the first one is using HEPA filters can reduce the amount of aerosol in the air by up to 90%. That's a huge cleaning power, and we need people to know about this. If your place that you're working doesn't have adequate ventilation, this is a great piece of equipment to add. That, you know, it's just a little portable box. It's the same one that you would have bought to deal with bushfires or pollen or anything else. There's loads and loads of resources on COVID is Airborne website on how to size them properly so you get enough cleaning power, etc. They can be put into workplaces now. They can be put into hospitals now. They can be put into schools, because we still have children in schools right now as we speak, that need to be protected. So this is a great piece of kit that can reduce the amount of infectious stuff in the air by 90% when you combine it with the use of a normal mask, not a respirator, okay? So that's really, really good cleaning power. This is an amazing study that was done in a hospital, but I think normal people can probably do it as well, because we are normal people in hospitals. They did everything the same except start using fitted respirators. Nothing else changed. Their vaccination didn't change. Their, you know, where they're working didn't change. The type of patients they're working with didn't change. And usually what happened was the people working with the COVID patients were 47 times more likely to get COVID than the people working with the non-COVID patients. All they did was change to a respirator, and they got rid of that excess risk. That is incredible protection power for workers everywhere. And I think that this is one of the wonderful studies done in the last year that has finally gotten to the bottom of whether this stuff works or not. So last year, we had a large-ish COVID outbreak by Australian standards, and we had lots of healthcare workers getting sick. Two things have changed between last year and this year. In New South Wales, they have allowed healthcare workers to use respirators. No, not every part of the hospital is using it, but certainly the high-risk parts, the red zones, the emergency departments, the ICUs, anyone in contact with a known COVID patient that hasn't been screened yet is definitely using it. And others do have a somewhat variable access to it as well, depending on supplies. So last year we had 97 healthcare worker infections acquired at work and 46 from an unknown source. And this was using the old guidelines, the old ICAG surgical mask guidelines, and not vaccinated. The vast majority of the workers in that outbreak were actually acquiring their infections at work. Now, I can't tell you how bad the gaslighting is when it comes to workers and getting infected at work. We were told in healthcare for so long that we were getting it at home and bringing it into work. Well, how did it get into our homes, you know? And this is exactly what is going on right now with all other types of workers. Like, healthcare workers have gotten over this bump, but the rest of the population who are also just experiencing the same thing are being told it's at home or you're getting it from somewhere else. No, people are getting it at work, because during a lockdown, that's where they are. They're either at work or they're at home. And as I said, the use of respirators is somewhat patchy. The use of ventilation is, you know, it's being done, but it's not uniform between different buildings and things. So we've still made a huge, huge reduction in the amount of people being infected through a combination of getting those workers vaccinated and giving them better masks. So here you see that there's a sevenfold reduction in transmission when some proportion of the workforce is vaccinated and they're using the right respirators and ventilation has been, you know, as best as we can. You can see also here, I've got a little quote from Lynn Gilbert from back then. She was strongly opposed to giving healthcare workers masks because she felt that if we didn't wear them perfectly, that we couldn't get any benefit from them. But actually, you don't have to wear them. It's good to wear them perfectly. Don't get me wrong. But if normal people fitting them in normal ways can still give you a benefit over and above wearing a surgical mask or a loose cloth mask. And if you get them fit tested, which is what every worker is entitled to be safe at their workplace, get them fit tested, you get even more protection. So this is something that's really, really important that every worker should have. Vaccination, look, it's very, very important. It's going to save loads of lives. We should get vaccinated if we can. Everyone that can should. And when it's your turn, please, please do. But it's just going to be a little bit too slow to avoid the disaster. We're actually already working under surge plans, we call them, but what is a surge plan? It's essentially a disaster, right? So we're in a disaster already in healthcare. So we need to move faster than this. There are some sort of measurements, early measurements saying, you know, how much we can reduce the transmission of Delta with vaccines, but it's by no means a real, you know, done deal that we definitely know what's going on there. And it's probably going to be less than with Alpha and the other variants. So we need more than just vaccines to get through this, to avert a massive, massive disaster in New South Wales. And we have to bear in mind that whatever we're doing, we're locked into this road until people can get their second dose and the second dose has had time to work. That's an awful long time to hold out when we're doubling every 11 to 12 days. So, you know, we have to do something else. Can we give people in the community respirators? What are they going to do with it if we give it to them? Well, apparently people do just fine. Okay. Other countries have tried it. It's depending on the styles. There are many, many new designs of respirators for community use. Some of them are more acceptable than the types that we use in healthcare. They're less painful. They fit better. There's so much more we can do. And I think this is a message that we just need to get out to people everywhere, that the fit, that not having a gap around the edge is so important now with Delta. It is just everything relies on that, as well as the filtration. But the fit, and comfort, so that you actually wear it. There's no point giving young people, especially, a mask that is uncomfortable. They cannot wear it. So comfort, fit, and filtration all need to be better in our masks now. We're not going to, like last year, I fought the whole year for cloth masks for everyone, but now we've just got to step it up. Ventilation. Everyone thinks ventilation is just totally impossible. Oh my gosh. Okay, so this little gizmo here is the carbon dioxide monitor that I use. It's literally a box with a number on the front. It is not complicated. It's a nice big number. You look at it, it's less than 800. You feel somewhat reassured that your ventilation is working well. We've been doing it for centuries and centuries. Florence Nightingale has done amazing observational studies on how ventilation affects the transmission of disease in multiple diseases. She was an absolutely an amazing and inspiring research scientist. Ventilation, it's like if a fish is in a tank, you're changing the water out, you're getting fresh water in, okay? And when you can't get fresh water in or between water changes, you for a fish tank, you would use the little pump filter. Well, for people as well, you can use those HEPA filters to supplement your ventilation in areas that aren't getting good enough ventilation, or if it's impossible, like we have bushfires coming up, it's going to get really, really hard to do just ventilation. So you use filtration because you're not going to be able to open the windows soon. Does it work? Well, yes, it does. Victoria Lush, they did an amazing piece of work looking at how spacing out patients so that there's less source of virus is really, really useful, and how they increased the fresh air and how that helped. And they also changed masks as well and how that all helped disease transmission. So this is not purely a hospital thing. Again, this could be applied anywhere. Spacing people out to reduce the source, getting better ventilation, getting better masks. That's what we need to do.